Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Off the ball, rugby.
I know Connacht fans who I talked to, it's great to see Connacht playing really well and throwing the ball around, but like, they want to see them winning matches and winning tight matches.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Yeah. After the Lord Mayor's ball here on the NFL pod, we're back in the boring old off the ball studio, Cian Fahey.
That when last week came to you. Is that a saying? Is that something I don't know about?
After the Lord Mayor's ball, it's kind of like what happens after the big event. You know, it's kind of the come down.
I never heard that expression. I recently met Dahi, who true work here, and he used to be the Lord Mayor of Dublin. So every time anyone says Lord Mayor for anything, I just think of him randomly. And he's a big NFL guy. He was at the game or something.
There you go. Yeah, you brought it back. You brought it back to an NFL connection.
Very quick detour that was.
We last came to you. People might have heard it. We broadcast from the bells of Croke Park. Or the media centre in the stands of Croke Park on a Sunday evening. We were still buzzing from an unbelievable occasion. And we'll talk about some other teams, I promise, today. But let's talk a little bit more about this, because I'm just saying the NFL media have released the Dublin game viewership. Vikings Steelers averaged 7.9 million viewers. This is in America. Second most watched NFL Network international game ever. Up 68% versus NFL Network's 2024 international games average. Vikings Steelers over 9 million viewers from 12:30 Eastern until the end of the game. That's impressive. That goes to everything that we said about the game living up to expectations, the everything going well, the crowd looking fantastic, buzzing, making it something worth watching. Because don't forget as well, on an early morning game, that's 9:30 in the morning. Yeah,
6:30 in the West Coast.
Yeah, 9:30 in the morning, 6:30 in the West Coast. People join the game as it goes on. You're going to start watching football for the whole day in a while anyway. You'll give it a pass if it's not catching your eye. Now, we had two good teams, but I think, honestly, the spectacle and the noise of the occasion will have kept people.
We had two good teams, but I quickly looked up what the international game that would beat it was.
Two big teams, is probably a better way of putting it.
Yes, but yeah. I would have assumed it was the Brazil game at the start of this year, because there's a Mexico game as well, I think, because you're closer to the time zone. That wasn't. Instead, it was actually in Germany in Frankfurt with 7.9 was a common. But I kind of went, 7.9 Germany, that's a bit surprising, because that's a similar early time. But that was last year with the Chiefs. So that's like half of that audience was Taylor Swift's audience, I'm guessing, which we didn't have in Ireland. So I'm going to say we were close enough that we were probably the biggest organic NFL audience.
No. Dismissing the Taylor Swift. I don't think she was there, was she?
No, but they watch every single game that Travis Kelce plays. And look at Jason Kelce was going on.
Got a new album out this week. Big news in my house. My wife and daughter are going to the cinema, I think, for some sort of unveiling of her limited edition of her new album.
Is that special media passes you're getting?
No, absolutely not. It's just limited release. So don't be dissing Taylor.
Look, it was great. And I'd be curious when it peaked. I assume it spiked at the end, because we got that dramatic finish.
Post 12 o'clock Eastern there is when it was
and when everyone's awake.
Yeah.
But like, I think like I keep going back to it, that the final drive, I just wish. So I really wish Jordan Addison hadn't been caught from behind, because that was a minute and a half or 2 minutes. And I was talking to Phil out in the office, and Phil was saying he watched the game, and I'm just kind of going, there's your explanation. Like, Phil probably knows a bit about American football, but I don't imagine he's sitting down and watching a full game every so often.
While there's Premier League on.
Yeah, well, he probably didn't see the full game that the Premier League games were on. But he was talking about it, and I was kind of saying to him, like, it completely would have changed the setup of that final drive if they had an extra 90 seconds or an extra 2 minutes. And that would have really heightened it then, because Wentz then isn't having to force it as much.
Yeah.
And then you might have got, like, no TV numbers or whatever, but pure intrigue, pure excitement.
Absolutely.
It would have gone through the roof. Because I remember, I'm still, like, a few days later, I'm still sat there and the noise rising for every snap. It's still kind of like,
there's a buzz to it.
Yeah, I loved it. Like,
the thing we probably missed on the occasion was that I think there was a real case of the Steelers bottling this, and I think it's almost good for their future relationship with Dublin that they got through the game, because they obviously conceded the two late touchdowns, then gave up the ball again. They punted into the end zone, which gave, they took a delay of game. They punted into the end zone. They gave the Vikings a good field position. Vikings got that first down or whatever, which meant they needed about, maybe we were working out as maybe at a very, very long 15. Field goal, about 15 yards. And they started messing up then. But like, that was almost bound to happen. They'd reached the limit of what they could do under Carson Wentz. And the big thing we kind of missed on the day, and it's hard to kind of follow it there on the day, was that they lost two starting offensive linemen in the game.
And
their center and the tackle.
Against that team as well, you don't want to lose.
Over the course of the game. And they became kind of decimated, which is probably why they couldn't get anything going in the third and fourth quarter until they did.
That's surprising, because in that press box they were announcing everything. I don't remember them announcing anything.
I actually do remember that the center went out all right, but yeah. I didn't hear about the tackle until afterwards. But again, you're just kind of missing things that we're probably doing reports.
I was too busy listening to Miles Smith, probably.
Exactly, yeah. Miles Smith, the big international renowned star. Who played at halftime, which we didn't talk about either, was that we were at a halftime show, Keane. I have to say, I just don't need it. Don't need it.
Especially
we should emulate everything the Americans do. I'm sorry. It's just like, even the tailgating stuff, like, I think people do their thing. And people don't come up the day before and things like that for an All-Ireland final. Or some people do, but not a huge amount. People can't afford it for a start. And then people go to the set. It's a smaller thing, and it's okay that it's a smaller thing. You stop in a certain place, maybe on the way to Dublin or in Dublin, and you meet a small crew of your family or your friends or your people from your town that you've always met there at that certain time. We don't need everything to be like a 30,000 gathering.
You know, I found it interesting. There was a great segment earlier this week with you, Una Mullally, yeah, on breakfast. And Arthur was like outcast in the corner, literally in the corner, as the guy who was like on his own saying exactly what you just said. But I think Arthur was 100% right in terms of the GAA fan. Mm. And like, because I remember when we were at Cork All-Ireland final, obviously didn't go the way we wanted it, so it wasn't going to be a great night either way. But most people I talked to were, win or lose, jumping on the train back home and we'll celebrate in Cork or we'll commiserate in Cork. Yeah. They didn't want to be in Dublin. And they weren't exactly in a rush to come up early on the day as well to be in Dublin. They would have enjoyed themselves on the journey up on that night as well, or on that morning as well. But it was a great point from Una that it's like, it's not really for them. It's for the people who are kind of tangentially in the city connected to the sporting event and thing that's happening. Like, there are loads of kids across Dublin and across Ireland now who have the flag football stuff and who know of the NFL now and who are engaged with the NFL to whatever degree they are because of the efforts that were made. So I think my opinion on the whole thing isn't really singular right now. I think there's a great point being made that the NFL has done this brilliantly.
Yeah.
That they have kind of put themselves in as part of the community without being like coming in and doing loads of charity work or anything like that. They've kind of brushed themselves off on people without them knowing. I had a funny one of like, it does kind of reminds you of how widespread America is and how large America is and how much it gets into our culture without us realizing. I was going back home after the game and I got back and I stopped off somewhere getting food on the way back or whatever. And some fella I had the thing on me still, the ticket thing. I forgot to take it off.
Had your accreditation,
Look at me. Yeah, that was it. Yeah, I was walking around holding it up into people's faces, you know. But your man kind of goes to me, goes, Jez, were you at that American football game? I goes, yeah. And he goes, bloody Yank, but he said something else. He said something Yanks, and I was like, would they ever get out of the place? And he was wearing a bloody NFL hat logo, the Yankees hat, like. And I was kind of looking at him going, you don't even realise, you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, 100%. And look, the last point just on the thing is, it's not to say we don't take lessons, by the way, from what the NFL do. What the NFL are able to do in terms of making an occasion out of their occasions is phenomenal. And there was a sort of a sense of a takeover of the city and everything like that. And it's like, there's more people, you know, in the stadium for All-Ireland finals and so on. And maybe they're a bit more regular and a bit more standard for us and all. But there's no reason that we can't make the All-Ireland hurling final, the All-Ireland football final. And ideally, I always think it's like, you know, as camogie and ladies football grow, we're in this beautiful situation where we've a month of finals.
Yeah.
Everything is integrated and so on, why can't we have this as a GAA festival month where all that is good is celebrated and it becomes more of a national thing and it becomes more of a national celebration and we do things like the 25-year Jubilee properly as a real thing, as an event, as like the Hall of Fame. Like WrestleMania does the Hall of Fame thing as a separate event the day before in a big stadium, not a stadium, but like in an arena or whatever, you know. Why couldn't that be how we do the 25-year jubilee or something like that. It doesn't have to be a full arena. You know what I mean? We take our own thing. But my point is, we have to make it our thing. We take the idea of how to take over things. We don't copy it, you know, in every single way and do, let's do the same tailgate that the, or let's do the same, you know, prep party or whatever they call those things that they have beforehand. It's not going to work. It's not going to work for
that's
DA.
Not who we are.
But taking the, we should be making as big a deal of our own games and our own culture as we do for things that come and visit us. And we say this on the NFL pod, we're massive fans. I'm not trying to in any way diminish it.
We're not really who we're talking about.
I'm not trying to diminish it, but it's like we need to be, like, why aren't we just a little bit more, maybe what we can take from the Americans is the ability to be loud. Let's be loud about our culture.
None of that's necessarily exactly what we
don't have to, we don't have to be loud like, you know, loud, but fat golf fans in Long Island or anything like that.
Well, there loud, you know? This isn't a week for that argument, I don't think.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
But actually, you mentioned a Hall of Fame there, and like, I'm trying to think of an example. Like, there's someone like Steve Hutchinson. I think he's never won a Super Bowl, would never have won an MVP, never really won anything. He is in the Hall of Fame, and he's introduced as everything Hall of Famer. Steve Hutchinson, he has that moniker, he has the gold jacket. Everyone knows he's an all-time great, and you don't forget it. And if you don't know who he is, he has the jacket and he has the title, so you know who he is. This came to my mind when we were talking about Hoggy after he retired earlier this week or last week, whenever that was, on the stage. And like, they were having the conversation about, you can't really put him in your top six forwards for the last century, I think, whoever was on. And they were kind of saying, you can't do this, can't do that, because he never won anything, or because he never won the All-Ireland final. And you're kind of going, that's not really right. And in America, they have that perfect thing of, if you were an incredible superstar, but you never won a Super Bowl, you have a Hall of Fame. Like, we don't have to do Hall of Fame, but there should be something like that that's more prominent than whatever it is for Irish sports people.
Miles Garrett it might never make the playoffs again, and he's going to be in the Hall of Fame.
Has he made it once yet? Oh, he would have, yeah.
Yeah, he would have in the earlier.
Baker went 1 year.
But I don't think he's ever going to go. I don't think he might make the playoffs, sorry, but I don't think he's ever going to win a Super Bowl as long as he stays at the Browns and he's just re-upped and so on. And I think some people might question that and think, like, is that a sign of a lack of ambition? And is it about your own stats
and
everything else?
$200 million.
And just getting paid? And is it not about winning things? But at the same time, he is going to be one of the all-time great players for that franchise. And he's a great player to watch. And he makes the Browns a lot more interesting. And he makes that franchise a lot more worth watching and so on. So,
and the other thing is...
But absolutely, by the way, we shouldn't be just kind of measuring things by... what in a team sport, what everybody else around you were able to help you do. If you were one of the best, you were one of the best.
And especially because, like, he's the highest scorer ever or whatever it is. He's going to get taken over in that eventually because of the way the scoring has gone. And so eventually he will be lost to history in that at some point, you know what I mean?
But if you have something like, I'm saying the Jubilee team, right, for example, at the moment that's brought out, it's in an empty stadium. It's earlier and earlier because there's more things happening on the pitch. They're going out for a wave. It's not broadcast on TV. Sometimes you can see it happening over.
Players aren't
shoulders.
Individually announced, are they?
They are individually announced. Oh. And right corner forward on that team, a great man from the town of Tumivara, you know, and that's all it is. Like, it's just a voiceover person saying it. And I thought that was great when I was a kid and I was at All-Ireland Finals and I really took it in, and there was a sense of these people from my youth that was not from, like, before my time, but that I'd heard lore of and so on. And as you get older, it's like, would it kill you to put a video package together?
Yeah.
Like, at the smallest thing, would it kill you to say, right, we're going to put this on at halftime in the All-Ireland Final when the crowds are full. Maybe people are gone for a drink or a bit of food, but there's more people in there than there is an hour and a half before a throw-in. And people are going to watch this and take a celebration of... like the whatever it might be, the Clare team in 1997 were a couple of years ago, and it's just like, you know, show James O'Connor's point in the last minute to win that game, show Davy Fitz's save, and every single person will have a moment from that year that you could show, and it just makes it, there'd be a buzz to it, like, it'd be brilliant.
And very simple fact, the Steelers game.
You're telling me the NFL wouldn't do that perfectly.
But they do it for not even for that level. like the Steelers game, we had the defense announced coming in, TJ Watt had his video, Cameron Hayward's video, they had the video of them running onto the field. Mm. And then you had Renegade when the defense first comes on the field in the fourth quarter. And there was a whole thing, a whole package for that as well.
Yeah.
And that's every week. That's not they did this for the Ireland.
Yeah,
game.
Yeah.
That's every week we have something like this and they put it all together.
Any other takeaways then before we move on forever? Until Jer's back next week and we talk to him about it.
Yeah, well, it makes a change talking about the 49ers even though they're all injured again. No, I think at the time I said this will definitely happen again and I think it probably definitely will happen again. But the more we've gone on the week, the more I've kind of thought to myself, the first one was an event for a lot of Americans. They'll definitely come over and make it their big trip. I wonder how it would... Do you think it would gradually drop off the more it happens or do you think it would actually go the opposite direction and grow?
I don't know because I think there's an element of... I think a lot of people who went to that game who weren't like hardcore American football fans will become Steelers fans in the way...
Sorry, I'm talking about the Americans coming
over. I know. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. But I wonder, will it counteract in a certain way? Yeah. Will there be
would
more...
Would change the dynamic of the game? The
Steelers are constantly coming here. Will people be genuinely Steelers fans when they come to the games? Will they be more engaged? It will change the dynamic of the game. I think there's also a lot of Pittsburgh Steelers fans. Mm-hmm. I think they probably... maybe they went big this time. I don't think people will only come once. I think they might not come next time.
We won't get all the players and stuff we got again.
You would think it'll be slightly less of an occasion, yeah. Although, like, I mean, they're not afraid to put a bit of money into these things either.
And I'm sure the boys didn't mind their free trip.
Exactly,
over here.
Yeah.
Brett Kiesel was like,
I think it will level off, but I think there might be enough to sustain regular trips. You know what I mean? It won't be the same people like every time, but, you know, you would have to think. And don't forget, it'll be a different away team every time as well.
And then eventually we'll have our own.
We sensed at the game that there was a lot of Vikings fans there, but like all accounts would suggest that it was a huge Pittsburgh.
Really? I haven't seen that.
Yeah. All accounts would suggest that it wasn't. But like there were a lot of spots of them. And they did add to the atmosphere as well. It wasn't exactly quiet on Pittsburgh third down either. So
it's a very simple
thing. We'll have a new away team.
It's a very simple thing as well, though. The color clashes were perfect. It's like the one's yellow, one's purple. If you had like Bengals Browns coming across, you'd be like, oh, who's who? You know what I mean? It just gives it another sense of occasion. Anyway, we should probably talk about actual
football.
There
was other NFL as we were sitting doing the podcast.
Missing everything.
We were kind of missing the first halves of the game. I got to watch the second halves and watch the late games.
In the golf.
A few interesting things in between that and the golf and the heart attack that was the Ryder Cup. There's a few things. We'll talk about Jackson Dart. You have that top of the thing and that's worth going into and there's a bit of analysis there. But I suppose we had our first week of... the injuries that kind of ruin a season and
depressing.
Like,
hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Tyreek Hill was actually probably having his best game of the season and a dislocated knee. It might be one of those that looks an awful lot worse than it is, though. No, you not think
well,
so?
It's a dislocated knee is so.
You've had a lot of knee issues now. I bout your superior knowledge.
Never dislocated, but the explanation I've gotten from someone who'd know is it's a minimum of 3 ligaments. So that's what a dislocation is.
So they're all gone kind of thing. So he's done ACL, MCL and...
Yeah, so you've got 4. So I'd say he's got his MCL, ACL and PCL, which is the 2 that are wrapped around.
And then the meniscus is the other one, isn't it?
Like, I'm not going to try and sound like a doctor. But as a wide receiver at that age, with that kind of injury, I'm kind of gone. You'll come back probably to get your salary, but I can't in any world envision him coming back and being anywhere close to... a high-end starting receiver. Like, he's pure speed-based.
Yeah.
He's pure change of direction-based. There's not many wide receivers who have a serious knee injury, come back, and are great. I don't know. I can't think of any off the top of my head. It ruined Odell Beckham's career, only did an ACL.
I know, and I was just about to say Odell Beckham because what happened to Malik Nabers, like, who obviously should come back and, you know, he's young, but from the Giants' point of view, like, they lost a young... future superstar, already superstar, but like on his way to Hall of Fame receiver in Beckham, who was never the same again. And now that they somehow, a generation on, they get another guy who's in the same class. And in his second
year.
In his second year. not literally the same class. Maybe took some of the same classes. And he's gone as well now for the year. And you know, you just hope that these things are... Odell Beckham's, I think, body wasn't set up for...
He was a little bit older as well.
He was in his year three. Was it year four, maybe?
I think he was further because it was the Rams, wasn't it? He'd gone from Giants...
Oh, no, the first time. He had a bad injury in New York.
Yeah. Wasn't ACL, though, I don't think.
Okay.
I could be wrong. You probably... He had hamstring issues all the time as well. The one thing I'll say about Neighbours to me is very similar to like Adrian Peterson, where he's always been the freakish of freak athletes. Yeah. So you're kind of thinking to yourself, if there's anyone who is going to come back, and at this stage of his career, he's probably the one who can. And unlike Hill as well, he's bigger. So if he comes back and has lost a step and needs to play like Anquan Boldin, he can probably do that too. So I'm less concerned about Neighbours. It's depressing. It's especially depressing because he's really fun to watch, but also because Dart had just come in for their literal first game starting together. And it's like, that happens immediately. And they seem to have a fairly decent understanding with each other. But yeah, this is that point in every season that always comes. Like, even if we go beyond who we've already talked about, Brock Purdy's toe injury apparently is like causing him to play quite poorly. Jaden Daniels hasn't been starting for a while, and we kind of were okay with that when the Commanders were able to win games, but they've lost two in a row now, I think.
Yeah.
And that becomes a bigger issue. But beyond that, just not even getting to watch him. There's someone else is missing that off the top of my head has gone for me, but there's a lot.
Well, it looks like we're going to be without Lamar for a few weeks.
Yeah, I was kind of waiting for him because, we can get to them now. Like, the Ravens, I think their season's over. Like,
wow.
They're 1-3, okay? They're missing Lamar for the next 2 or 3 weeks, so that means they could wind up at 1-5, 1-6. I don't know if their bye is coming up. But it's not just Lamar, like... Madueke, I can never say his name properly, he's done for the year, and without him they can't stop the run. You're already missing Lamar, who is like, even when he comes back with a hamstring injury, probably won't be 100% effectiveness in Lamar, because we all know how hamstrings work at that level.
Yeah.
And then you're on the other side, you can't stop the run, but that's only two of them. Like, Lamar Jackson's out, Ronnie Stanley's injured, these are all, I don't know, they're all varying lengths, but they're all injured enough to be noteworthy. Ronnie Stanley, their starting left tackle, is out. Marlon Humphrey, starting cornerback. Nate Wiggins, starting cornerback. Roquan Smith, starting linebacker. Kyle Van Noy, starting linebacker. Travis Jones, Broderick Washington. Like, these are
great.
All...
It's great that they've got, starting players missing on all three lines of the defense, because that's not going to be problematic at all.
Especially, their defense, when fully healthy, isn't exactly trustworthy. So, like, it's not exactly in a great place. But offensively, they've got Cooper Rush coming in, I think, who is like... Cooper Rush is that famous Tom Moore quote where... We don't practice without Peyton Manning, because if we don't have Peyton Manning, we're screwed, let's say.
Yeah,
and we don't practice
fucked
screwed.
Is the word. We're on digital audio only here. We're allowed to say it.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to be something like... Anyway. I was going to say something there that I can't say. But anyway, this all brings us full circle. This massively opens the door for the Steelers. Like, who I was trying to think of a minute ago who's gone already? Joe Burrow. Like, Joe Burrow, in the AFC North. And, like, the Browns are changing quarterbacks by the looks of things. The whole thing's a mess. And the Steelers are just there like... We look pretty good right now.
So can I agree with you that it absolutely opens the door for the Steelers, while also just taking a little bit of, I suppose, calm down sauce on the Ravens? Because
telling me to calm down.
Despite all of those injuries, the Steelers are flawed. They've had a very easy run so far. They're 3-1. Now, I think... You give them an absolute win against the Vikings, they would have been, despite the fact that I think they contributed to the fact that it was close in the end, I think they would have been very unlucky to lose that game. They were the better team. The Patriots had 5 turnovers against them. One of them was in the end zone. One of them was a throw into the end zone. Patriots should have won that game. I watched all of us. They really should have. And that's not being a homer. That's just saying I thought they were better than them. And now turnovers are their own fault. But they're not really Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh didn't contribute too much to them. They were basic, normal tackles. I think they went for the ball once. There was a sack on May and he kind of couldn't get out of it, and there was someone else waiting for him, and I'd give them that one. The rest of them were sort of the Patriots' fault, right? And then, so that's a kind of a, in giving games and taking away games, that's 2-2 with the easiest part of their schedule. They've got hard. They still have to play the Ravens twice. If the Ravens can get back anyway healthy, they're still the best team in that division.
Yes.
And the Browns and the Bengals are going to be non-factors. In the terms of the playoffs anyway, in terms of winning the division. So it just gives them that little bit of leeway. They've got a lot of winnable games. I was looking at their schedule.
The Ravens, though.
Yeah, a lot of winnable games. They've had a really tough start. They've played the Lions. They've played the Bills. Who did they lose that the weekend? The Chiefs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's in the first 4 weeks of the season. They've played those three teams.
They've their hard part of the schedule done already?
For the most part, I would say,
I guess,
and what you're saying is absolutely fair in terms of this is a red flag. It's not just that they're 1-3. Here's all the problems. So they could be in trouble. And even in terms of, like, you know, we were thinking of them as a Super Bowl contender, maybe that's gone. But in terms of their season being over, I just think they've a lot of outs.
And to be fair, to your point, they have a running back there who's got experience of being like, oh, we have a quarterback who can't throw the ball, or a backup quarterback who doesn't know what he's doing. All right, lads, give me the ball 42 times in this game and I'll get us there.
And they haven't exactly emptied his tank so far this season which is weird, but maybe there is a sense of we're going to be leaning on you for October, so we're going to not have you do too much in September.
Yeah, but interestingly as well, I feel like I've always kind of looked at him and gone, oh, he's going to slow down at some point. Even if they had overloaded him to this point, I'd still kind of look at him and go, yeah, keep doing it.
Still Derrick Henry.
It doesn't matter. And maybe it will prove to be important. It's one of those things, you know, after a game's over and something happens and it's like not noteworthy at all, but it might linger in your mind. Keaton Mitchell hit a long touchdown run at the end of that game last weekend. And he's a guy who, prior to injury a couple of years ago, was a game breaker. Was a guy who you throw a quick slant to, a quick screen to, or you give him a handoff off the outside and he's going for 40 plus yards. Yeah. He was just doing that constantly. Now maybe he's not there, and maybe it won't be as effective without Lamar, of course. But if he's fully healthy, you will have this opportunity to be like, right, Derrick Henry, you're going to carry the ball 25 times, 30 times. Keaton Mitchell's going to carry it 4 or 5 times and also catch 5 passes. Those 5 passes will be easy for the quarterback to do. Just get the ball in his hands. 3 of them might be caught for -3, -4, -5 yards. And then the other 2 might go for 80. You know what I mean? And that's how you can kind of just dig out a result and get a result that you need. But the only thing, I amongst all that, you said the Browns and the Bengals, they're not really factors. And that's part of the problem for the Ravens, though. Because the Steelers' next 2 games are the Browns and the Bengals. And you're like, oh, so they might just jump out here and keep widening that gap. And now there is the extra wildcard spot in the AFC. So maybe that is where you are as a Ravens fan.
I'm not even suggesting they make the playoffs, by the way. I just think that they will remain in contention for... I don't think this is a kind of a pack it up and let's go and get a good draft pick and worry about next year.
Well, let me hold these out for you, right? So right now, the teams leading their divisions, we've got the Colts at 3-1, the Steelers at 3-1, the Chargers at 3-1, and the Bills at 4-0. So let's take them as they're in the playoffs.
And the Chiefs are in the playoffs. Let's give them.
Okay, we're putting the Chiefs in as well. So we've got one place left. So we've got the 2-2 Patriots, the 2-2 Broncos, the 2-2 Bengals. We can probably get rid of them. The 3-1 Jaguars. Are you picking the 1-3 Ravens over them to make the playoffs?
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2 times the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Yeah, I'd pick them ahead of the Patriots, and I'd pick them ahead...
Broncos?
I think they'd be there with the Jaguars, and I think you're probably talking about the Broncos. Broncos are going to find it hard because they've got the hard division. So
we're talking Broncos, Jaguars, Ravens. We've got 3 of them.
And the Ravens, I wouldn't rule out the Ravens winning the division either. That's the other thing.
Really?
Like, they still have to play them twice, you know? So that's it. So, again, I just think it's not even that... There's loads of paths, is my point, as opposed to it's going to happen.
I am just going to quickly look at, because you did mention their schedule, like there are some very easy games here, like a home game against the Jets. You obviously have the Browns, you've got 2 against the Bengals, you've got the Patriots who you were slating.
Wasn't slating. Delighted with their progress, but it's early days.
Fortunately for them, they have the Steelers, both of the Steelers games are in the last month of the season.
Yeah.
So Lamar, in theory, should be back. So you convinced me.
When Ravens usually kind of pick things up before bottling in the playoffs.
The Ravens are going to win the Super Bowl. Let's go.
Oh my God. Somebody's not happy with that idea.
I genuinely thought that was falling through the ceiling.
I don't know if that came out in the mics, but our entire studio just shook there.
The whole camera shook.
Marconi House is a building site at the moment, in case you hear any of our output. Sounding a bit.
I really
odd
wish
at
people
moment.
Could see the gigantic fan outside of here, because it's like, you know, the hovercraft fans. It's literally one of them in an office setting. It's mad.
Absolutely bizarre. Come here. While
that's
we're talking about I'm all
the
over office. Your map, by the way. I'm not in any way sticking to your order, and I apologize for that.
I never do anyway.
But we're talking about the AFC North. We're talking about the Browns not being a factor, or are they? Their defense is going to keep them in games. They beat the Packers last week. They stayed in the game again this week. They're going to make a change of quarterback, it looks like. Dylan Gabriel. What do we know about Dylan Gabriel other than the fact that he is not Deion Sanders' son?
Well, that's kind of the thing. That's been the whole rap on him. It's like, oh yeah, that guy they took in the second round ahead of Shedeur Sanders, when everyone's talking about Shedeur Sanders for a while. He's a left-handed quarterback who played in the preseason and played fairly well for a rookie. He throws the ball pretty well, fairly accurate, has a strong enough arm, not big, not athletic, but probably will over time develop into a decent decision maker and able to be running offense effectively. But I feel like this change is happening right now because Flacco hasn't been up to what they expect him to be. God only knows what they're expecting him to be, because like, he's Joe Flacco and he's been that guy for quite a while.
Like 40.
Yes, but they've made this change feeling more of desperation than anything else. But this was also the most predictable thing that was going to happen this year. Gabriel's going to come in. He might last a month, 2 months, and then Sanders eventually is going to come in. So they're going to stack up.
So, yeah.
I think so. It's 100% going to happen. And it's
just for the eyeballs.
No, I think it's a simple reason that Gabriel, you're asking him to do too much right now. He needs to sit and develop and figure things out. He'll have some good plays, but like, even in the preseason, he was throwing stupid interceptions and he was just making bad decisions. And that's happening. Like, you can't blame him for that. He's a kid. He's a guy who isn't coming in with this massive pedigree. He's someone who probably long-term will hopefully be a high-end backup like a Josh McCown. That's probably what you're talking about.
This is like him getting a few starts is good putting him in the market,
he'll make so much money in the NFL
for 10 years. Yeah. Like, yeah.
But
what do the Browns have to offer? Like, you know, so they've got a very, very strong defense. Do you know what? They lost Cedric Tillman this week, which is actually a big deal, believe it or not. He's been put on IR, but he's a really good out for, especially a kind of, well, Flacco in this case, but I'd imagine he'd be a good player for a rookie quarterback as well. There's just not much going on there,
in terms of
skilled players. Like,
this is part of the problem when you put in a guy like Flacco and the way Flacco plays at this stage of his career. He doesn't really throw to his wide receivers a huge amount. And by that I mean, it's not necessarily, he doesn't throw to them, he only throws to them in certain ways. He'll take shots on the sideline, he'll throw the quick outsides. He's not really working the shallows underneath or the intermediate throws, the timing plays. He doesn't want to do that at this stage of his career because he's Joe Flacco. He's just trying to keep his job and stay on the field as long as possible, like we talked about Russell Wilson a few weeks ago. So that limits how much you can see the receivers play. And in Cleveland, they have a bunch of young receivers alongside Jerry Jeudy, whose career has just not gone. Like, he's talented. He's often got abuse from Steve Smith over the years for whatever reason. Steve Smith seems to hate him, but he's kind of proven Steve Smith right in recent times because he hasn't lived up to expectations. The Broncos are happy to jettison him off and moving to Cleveland, and Cleveland, that hasn't really worked out. David Njoku is still there, still playing fairly well. Quinshon Judkins has broken off a big run or two, and he looks like he's going to be a very good running back, but you're limited then. Like,
I picked him up actually on a kind of a late round in fantasy because obviously we were unsure as to what his status would be. He hadn't signed at the start of the year, and he didn't play, I think, the first 2 weeks. But I think he looks very good. Like, he looks like he's... there was a sort of a sense of the Browns messed up by picking him. He was in the same school as Henderson, who went to the Patriots, who was kind of the star of preseason. Yeah, and they look, oh, you got the wrong Ohio State running back. And there seems to be always the wrong Ohio State running back.
It's all of them.
It's the thing that comes from that. But it doesn't look like that is the case. It looks like they got the right guy there. He looks like he's a beast, to be honest. So
I think the concern with him is more like the character side rather than the talent side, which is more of a long-term thing. But even then, like, best case scenario, he's what Nick Chubb was.
Yeah.
And like, when the Browns had Nick Chubb, their offense still didn't really go anywhere, even as good as Nick Chubb was.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be overly excited about them. I think, like, we said it. Like,
hard to ever be excited about the Cleveland Browns, like, no matter what, is it?
Pretty much. Well, if you're Myles Garrett and they're paying you $200 million to quit on your career, as we were saying earlier
It's even the two shade of brown. Like, I just don't know if I'd ever.
I said also, like, you know, they wear brown and everyone thinks they're named after the color brown. They're named after the owner. His name was Brown. It's like, you don't have to have a brown jersey.
Oh, is it not? I thought it was a brown bear.
No, they don't have a bear logo. They've got a helmet.
They have a secondary logo that's a bear, but there's already a team called the Bears.
But do you know, as much as we talk about like Americans and their pageantry and they do everything right, the Browns, like, do they do anything right? Like, they're, even their jerseys are horrendous. Like, there's nothing
good. It's an orangey brown and a kind of a black brown. Yes. And it's just like they
couldn't even get two different colours.
Not only are both colours horrible, but they don't even go together.
Like Henry Ford said on cars, you can only have one colour. Anyway,
Henry Ford more successful than the Cleveland Browns.
That's not saying much.
Let's talk about Jackson Dart. He made his debut.
Yes.
The Giants won. They that beat the 0-3 Giants beat the 3-0 Chargers. Now, again, Chargers probably at an early stage of development type of thing, that they'll come for a 1 p.m. kickoff in the East Coast, and they probably will throw away a couple over the course of the year. But at the same time, good results, like good performance. Happy with them.
Can we get a time check here? Because this is the top of our running order. I feel like we're about 40 minutes.
Oh, this is it's the second last topic. Everything has flowed well.
I enjoyed Jackson Dart's debut, actually, because I wasn't a huge fan of him coming out. I thought he's a bit interesting, a few tools, kind of that kind of thing. Like, oh, he'll come in and he'll throw some deep balls, he'll be flashy, and he can run quite a bit. He runs really well.
Mm.
But whenever you have a rookie starting, defensive coordinators understand this as well, because they approach the game in this way. You want to see how he reacts to what the defense is doing. You want him to prove to you he understands what the defense is trying to do to him. So it's not a situation of him coming in and being like, oh, I have an out route in this, I'm going to throw my out route and that's going to be completed and go. He's going, right, I have an out route here. What's the defense lined up as? Okay, he's there, right. But if he moves here at the snap, then I've got to do this. He's got a process, in other words, which isn't always the case. And the Chargers really helped us evaluate him, because they were like, right, let's throw everything at him. We are going to show you this blitz, we're going to drop out of it. We're going to show you this off coverage, we're going to change to aggressive coverage. We're going to move the safety at the last second. We're not going to blitz at one stage, what they did, which is incredible. Like, it's incredibly aggressive and incredibly smart from the defense, but they did get punished for it. They dropped both of their defensive tackles and only rushed their two edge rushers, which is mental, because like no one ever does that. And Jackson Dart was like, oh, got to the top of my drop. There's no one in front of me. The edge rushers are coming. I've got my wide receiver who I want to throw to. I'm going to go and throw to him. And then he stops himself and he goes, right, now I'm going to jump forward. He steps forward through the pocket. Now he pulls the two defensive tackles forward, which creates the space for Malik Nabers in behind. And now if you watch it on first viewing, Dart's a little bit all over the place, and this is something he'll clean up. His mechanics are all gone, so he's throwing the ball like this rather than like tight in, and it works. The throw isn't perfect, but it gets there, and you're thinking to yourself on first viewing, like, ooh, that's bad, that looks rough. But then you watch it back and you realize what the defense had done with the two defensive tackles and how he had to move to pull them down and create that space for Nabers, and you're like, oh my god, he's actually quite smart now. Very smart, I was going to say, but I can't say that yet, because this plays out over sample size.
Yeah.
The fact that he can do it is the first question. Now, can you do it often enough for the offense to be efficient and for you to avoid throwing 15 interceptions in a year?
And, like, the Giants are an interesting case, because they've got some good pockets. Like, they have a good front seven.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
great pass rush.
They've got Carter, they've got, maybe the run is an issue. They've got Brian Burns.
I wasn't saying that the run is an issue. I was just saying like the pass rush there is particularly impressive.
Yeah, so Carter's been brilliant. I think everybody would agree. Brian Burns, still a very good player. Thibodeau. Right, so they're well stocked in the front seven there. They've got some holes in some of the rest of the defense. And then the offense, you had a quarterback that's coming in, Cam Scadabo, seems to be the hero of New York. Like, he is one of those classic New York character that everybody immediately loves and they think is going to be the, like, but great, like, get whatever you can out of these guys. Like, you know what I mean? If someone needs to be a cult hero that fights for that extra 2 yards or whatever, like, a football team needs that type of player, you know? And then with Slayton and Robinson as a complement to Neighbors, there's a lot to like about the offense.
Except
you give
for that
Jackson Dart that year, and you give him a year of getting some, like, you give him a year of getting reps under his belt, and maybe next year with a couple of good draft picks, maybe a free agent or two in the secondary in particular, the Giants become a playoff team, playoff potential team. And then they've missed Nabers all year. It's a kick in the teeth when they're finally kind of building something. Now, it doesn't mean that maybe it's better off that Dart doesn't have an ace
year,
and he can go and kind of figure out the game a little bit more without an out of one of the best receivers in the NFL.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2 times the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Like, if we could sit here right now and wave a magic wand and guarantee that Nabers would come back 100% and be exactly the person
then
we wanted to be, you kind of turn around and go,
situation.
This is almost a positive that he's not there, because there was, like, the very first play of the game, Dart, sorry, my very first play of the game, very first drop back of the game for Dart. So first time he looks to pass, he drops back and the safety rotates down from Neighbours' side and they're playing press man coverage on him. And now that means when you have Neighbours, that means that's an instant I'm throwing the ball your way. But he really rushed because it was Neighbours and he didn't set his feet or set him up to throw properly, and that led to, they got a defensive pass interference from it, so they still gained 20 odd yards. But it could have been a much bigger play if he had set himself properly and not rushed it. And I kind of looked at that and went, ooh, if that wasn't Neighbours, would he have taken his time more? But he just threw it up going, oh, I've got Neighbours 1-on-1. I could definitely have him. So maybe like that would is something that he'll develop better. So now he's got to throw to Jaden Hyatt. He's got to throw to Slayton, Wandale Robinson, Gunnar Olszewski is still there. Like, these aren't stars. Most of them, they aren't. Like, Slayton's great, but great solid starter is what I mean when I say great. Hyatt should have been a much better player than he has been. He's got incredible talent, just never has worked out. And the other two guys are kind of slot receivers. So he's going to have to be very good, but Dayball's a good coach. I hope they actually keep him.
And Dayball's on. See, that's the other thing. If Dayball is the right guy, other people need to make the right decision over the course of this year, because this was supposed to be a year to show significant improvement. But now again, are you going in with another new quarterback mixed with Neighbours being out and integrating a young defence? Like, do you give him another year regardless here? You know,
I don't think that's
the decision. You're in New York and, you know.
Yeah. Like, no, I think you've got to
winning
see
on Sunday
reacts.
Was a big deal. They couldn't be going 0-4 like the Jets, because, like, Glenn's in trouble already here. Yeah. Like, you know, and that's...
I think when you sign on as the New York Jets head coach, just that's the day.
You're already in trouble.
You're already looking like your chances are you're gone here.
He got his dance up the sideline last week anyway, so at least we got that out of him.
Himself and Lowry were having a great weekend of dancing. I think he has to win a few games, and I think most importantly, you have to see that quarterback developing and growing a little bit. If Dart comes in and he follows this up with constant mistakes, you can have constant mistakes, but if you're not complementing that with real positives, real stretches of high quality, then you kind of go, right, Dable, you got to go. But I feel like if they feel like they're in the right direction, moving in the right direction, they'll show patience with him, just because he has that previous proof of being a great coordinator and understanding offense. I think not every head coach should get that benefit, but sometimes you have to do it based on making a meritocracy, because realistically, coaches shouldn't all be treated the same way.
Absolutely. Speaking of Jackson Dart, obviously it was a rookie debut, or in terms of more than a snap or two, and impressive. One rookie that really stood out this week was the previously very quiet for a number 6 overall pick in the draft, Ashton Gentry, but he showed why they did it, because he had that... My sense of it was that, like, he was being tackled behind the line constantly. There wasn't much he could do. And even then, he was, you noted even in the first, you were surprised by his stats because you saw him breaking tackles, but they were 8 yards behind the line of scrimmage. So there's only so much you can do. But he got a bit of a run on Sunday and he looked unbelievable. And I was playing against him in fantasy and won the game with the two highest scores in the league and won by 7 points. And mainly the reason I was panicking all week was because I think Ashton Gentry got 35 points or something like that. He was unbelievable.
I wrote an article about him the other day, and I started it off by going, Ashton Gentry has finally had his breakout game, and I kind of went to myself,
it's week four, four games in. Yeah.
But it also didn't...
We expect so much.
I also didn't rewrite it, because I was like, it's kind of true. And it's not even a slight against him. It's just, like you said, this has been coming. And the way he did it to me was so impressive, because while he is that bowling ball of butcher knives moniker that Ezekiel Elliott had years ago, he also has an incredible brain for running. His big long touchdown comes because he's running off left, running his own to the left, and his left guard has been beaten early, and he sees the left guard has been beaten, so the running lane that he wants to go through is closed, and he stops and squares up to the defender who's beaten his left guard, which stops the defender's feet for a split second. All of this happens very quickly, a split second, which allows the left guard to reposition himself slightly, and then that hole is open again. And Gentry has the quickness and the intelligence and the balance then to catch up to the original hole and then go through. But because it's late and delayed, there's now a bunch of bodies he's got to pick his way through. So he's on the second level. He's gained about 2 yards at this stage. Now he's got to move his feet and chop around and dip and move around to get through the bodies. He weaves through them, and he does. And further on, because it's delayed again, the safety who was deep in the middle of the field has come across early. So now the safety is a perfect angle to come and tackle him. And Gentry's just like, all right, time to hit the afterburners, and goes right past them. And you're kind of going, in that one play, you have ticked every single box we look for in a running back. And you've done it all in one play, and you've gained 80 yards on a touchdown or whatever it was. Yeah. And you're kind of going, oh, wow. But it's two touchdowns as well. Sorry, it's two other touchdowns. He had two receiving touchdowns. Neither of them were particularly spectacular plays. They were balls thrown outside and he caught them and turned into the end zone. But the ease at which he caught them, turned into the end zone, shed a tackler, a linebacker tackling him, as if it wasn't there. He just fell off him, as if he was like a heat melting the defender away. He did that twice and went straight into the end zone. You're kind of going, wow, if this offense could naturally create space, if this offense had more weapons around him and Geno wasn't throwing the ball to the defense over and over and over again, he'd be doing incredible things.
I really backed Geno at the start of the year and it does seem like he's just not... I thought he played well in the first game against the Patriots.
I think Geno has these games
in control of the offense, but...
I wouldn't be overly... I'm concerned about it, but I think Geno's a guy who's always had a game like this in him where the interceptions were mostly aggressive decisions and... another game will come and they'll all work for him.
But I also think that if you've got Genty as that option, first option, and he's your number one on the call sheet guy, and he becomes that reliable both with through the air or on the ground, and Bowers gets back to the kind of form he was shown in week one before he got hurt, like the options for Geno, even before you bring in the receivers, he has got, you know, two beasts there available to him at all times.
Play that more conservative.
Break it up. I don't know if the Raiders are generally good enough though. We're nearly out of time. We didn't get to, like, so Sunday Night Football 40 all draw which you don't get too often, the Packers and the Cowboys, right? Big question here I would just have is are you concerned about the Packers? Like the Cowboys, you know, their defense was meant to be, I think they got -8 in fantasy. I had their bye week this week anyway, so I dropped them. But I was fairly disgusted by that. And like, they obviously lost to the Browns. And you're like, oh, those games happened. The offense couldn't get going. And the offense did get going this time. The defense is awful. And it's like, the Cowboys just, their offense is going to get into a flow and Dak's good enough and he's going to make something out of Pickens and so on, but they're not at the level we thought that the Packers were at, and it's just like getting sucked into these bad teams and playing to their level.
Yeah, you've kind of
that's not a good sign. Like
you've kind of summed it up perfectly. Like the game itself, every so often I have these games where I think I'm losing my mind because I'm watching one team batter the other one and they just don't score points.
Mm.
And it's like, that's what happened with the Packers in the first half. Like the Cowboys' first score in this game, I think it was in the second quarter after the Packers' second touchdown. It was actually, after the Packers' second touchdown to go 14-0 up. It was a blocked extra point returned for two.
Yeah.
And you're like, that's the first way you've scored. And then the Packers were 13-2 up and completely dominating. Like the only times they were losing on drives or stopping on drives were penalties or stupid decisions from themselves or mistakes, which again, we've talked about previously, they're a young team, so we kind of expect that. But then you get to the 2-minute drill and Dak wills the offense. He's just dragging the offense on field, gets them into the end zone, picking scores, does a good job. Or he got them short anyway, at least then they got in. And you're like, okay, that's fine. It's now 13-9. It's halftime. The Packers have a lead they deserve, they earned. And there's 40 seconds left in the half. And they drop Jordan Love back and he gets sacked. And suddenly the Cowboys have the ball. And it's like, oh my God, they're actually like in position to score. And they score another touchdown on a short field. And somehow it's 17-13 or whatever it was, 16-13 to the Cowboys. And the Cowboys have played the worst half of football I've ever seen in my life. And if you at that halftime came to me and said, the Cowboys are going to score 40 points in this game, I would have just been like, no, there's absolutely no way in the world they can do that. Now, Pickens had a couple of really big plays and showed his value. He also still had the boneheaded stupid stuff that he does all the time. So that's a real testament to how poor the Packers were overall. Mm. Parsons was great in the first half, didn't have as much of an impact in the second. They just made too many mistakes. And they, like, realistically, the Cowboys should never have been with them. And amazingly, in the final 2 minutes of the fourth quarter, the Cowboys scored Pickens to get a go-ahead touchdown and the Packers actually like showed that metal to come back and get the field goal. And you're kind of thinking, all right, they've righted it all. Let's win it in overtime and go on. And they didn't then. The Cowboys got their field goal and it was just, they were literally 1 second away from losing. So the Packers, I'm not going to overreact to them as the season wears on because I do think this is the type of team they are. But you should be concerned a bit more now than I would have been 3 weeks ago if you were a Packers fan.
Yeah, maybe they play up to the level as well as playing down.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like their best performance was against the Lions and the Lions have been absolutely brilliant ever since. So
you know, I have to be fair to, as a Javonte Williams, the running back for the Cowboys, he was really good. And
which is unusual for a Cowboys running back in the last few years.
Yeah, just since Zeke's payday really. But like give him some bit of flowers, but outside of that, the rest of that offense, it stinks without CeeDee Lamb. How did they score 40 points? I don't know. You can see it in me. I'm like genuinely like, I start to question myself watching these games.
On that note, no other teams we're talking about. Patriots score 40 points and we don't even mention them. That's just the
way
things
are now. Yeah, who are you playing?
the Panthers.
Ah, that's why.
Who won 30-0 last week.
Should have scored.
And then, by the way, the league is bananas, right? So the Panthers beat the Falcons 30-0.
Oh, yeah.
The Falcons go out the next week. Panthers go out the next week and lose by 40 points to the Patriots or whatever it was. They got a garbage touchdown, I think, or an early touchdown. I don't know what, 30 points, say, to the Patriots after winning by 30. And then the Falcons go out and beat the Commanders. I think the Falcons are going to be one of those home and away teams, it seems, this year. But
I haven't watched that game back. I need to, though, because Penix Jr. was like screwed 2 weeks ago, and then he was terrible last week, and I just wondering what version of him showed up this week.
I'm not sure, but
we'll find out next week.
Got the job done anyway. So that is it. We will be back with you next Wednesday. Enjoy the game starting tonight, which is injury ravaged San Francisco 49ers. Jared
Wednesday night football
against the Rams. No, it's Thursday. I got it wrong. And then we'll have a usual slate of Sunday games, and we'll be back with you next Wednesday. Enjoy your NFL watching this weekend, even though it won't be in Dublin.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.